So let me call up the panelists. We're going to have a panel discussion following up on this lovely talk by Steve, discussing future speculations about where this field of strongly correlated quantum matter might be heading. So one thing that I think has been established, as Steve certainly told us in his talk, over the past 25 years, is that the standard paradigms developed prior to that period for understanding the behavior of electrons moving around in solids certainly breaks down under extreme conditions, such as being in low dimensions, in one dimension, such as systems such as carbon nanotubes, two-dimensional systems in strong magnetic fields and at low temperatures, that's the fractional quantum Hall effect. And I think what the future, in my view, is going to be focusing on is whether the standard paradigm, Fermi-liquid theory and essentially Landau order parameter theory, whether that breaks down under more ordinary circumstances in materials. By ordinary circumstances, I just mean room temperature in some material. Okay, it may involve electrons moving around in the material from the D shell of the atoms, such as in the high TC superconductors or other transition metal oxides, or the F shell electrons in heavy fermions, or perhaps low density two-dimensional electron gas. Anyway, the panel we have here, you can read the names. I guess Xiaogan Wen will tell us his views on these exotic new quantum phases that we're certainly starting to understand much better theoretically. Nick Reed and Phil Anderson will, in some sense, give us two striking examples of this. Nick will tell us about non-abelian statistics, I believe, and Phil, some thoughts on high TC. And finally, really most importantly, to keep us all honest, particularly in the field of condensed matter physics, Subir Sachdev will be telling us about new and hopefully future experimental probes, which will enable us, hopefully, to get a handle on some of these vexing theoretical issues. Okay, so let me call up Xiaogan.
There's an Eastern culture regard a family of a profession almost as important as a family based on biological ties. So, but what is a family of a profession? Here is an example. So as a happy member family, I like to say congratulations, David, and congratulations, Frank. I also like to thank ITP. It's a turning point of my career when I was postdoc here. And what I did at that time is I ran away from the family, which can only happen here at ITP. So let's go to my talk. We used to believe that Landau signature breaking theory is a theory of every phase of matter. And here I'd like to say that, like to argue, there is a large class of new state matter that lie beyond Landau signature breaking theory. And those new state matter is very rich, exciting, and really they form a whole new world. And what is the player here? And we know that Landau signature breaking theory is actually a theory for particle condensation. So with this realization, naturally, to obtain new state of matter beyond the signature breaking, we simply need to contract a state with a condensation of extended object. So one example of extended object would be a network of one-dimensional strings, which is called string net. Or you could have a condensation of a network of membranes, you can call forms or whatever. And here I will concentrate on this string net condensed state. The string is not fundamental, it's just a line of boson. Here we only consider a boson system, just a line of boson, like, okay, just like this. And a string net condensed state simply is a superposition of a different string net configuration, just like a boson condensed state. And also like a boson condensed state, we have a collective mode on top of ground states, which have a string net condensation. The collective mode happened to be our old friends, gauge boson. The gauge group is determined by how strings are connected. So for this kind of string with no branch, we get a Z2 gauge theory. For this kind of branching, we get SO3 cross SO3 chain summon theory. And there is also defect in the string net condensed states. And the end of a string is a defect. And it's behave like independent particle. And the end of string can carry fractional charge and Fermi statistics, and in two dimensions, even fractional statistics and non-abelian statistics. And there are also phase transition in this string net condensed states. But it's kind of a type beyond the Landau series. We could have a continuous phase transition between state with identical symmetry, no change in symmetry, no other parameter. And we could also have a gapless excitation with no symmetry, no symmetry breaking, but the gapless excitation still robust against almost any perturbation. And there is also a mathematical foundation for this condensed states, which is not group theory, but a mass called the tensor category theory. It's very hard to say anything about future. And here I just want to ask two questions. One is how much particle condensation have already given us. Then we can imagine how much a string net condensation can potentially give us. The particle condensation gave us a crystal superfluid, Bose-Einstein condensation, liquid crystal display, and a hard drive in my computer. The spin net condensation, we can have a spin liquid, boson metal, gapless states without quasi particle or Fermi liquid states, which violate Latinus theorem. And we can also construct almost all the PNP symmetric topological field theory in two dimensions from string condensation. But there's a problem. All these states are theoretical realization through model Hamiltonians. And we have no experimental realization so far. But on the other hand, it's not terribly hard to realize those states in experiments. We simply need to, for example, realize a state with artificial photons. We simply need to realize this kind of XXZ model in some system, maybe like cold atom system or fractured spin system. You know, just this simple Hamiltonian would do the job. And so knowing that the string net condensation can give this gauge boson and the fermion, we may ask whether the gauge boson and the fermion in the vacuum actually come from the string net condensation in the vacuum. The answer is yes and no. The vacuum have a following, I think, four key properties. The yes part of answer comes from the fact that the string net condensation can explain unify the first two, the gauge interaction and the Fermi statistics. But it cannot explain the last two, the carrier fermion and the gravity. So so I will summarize with this picture. It's kind of blueprint to make new state matter. It's could also be a picture of older material or a vacuum. And so I will leave this question.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. So let me call out Nick Reed, and I guess we're switching to low tech.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to talk about one direction, or maybe two themes for future work. So this concerns the same sort of thing that we've already been hearing about, complex behavior over many-body ground states. And particularly, I want to talk about quantum Hall type of states in two space dimensions. And in particular, this theme of non-abelian statistics, which is a possibility when you have a quantum system in two space and one time dimension. So what this means is that you have degenerate states. If you have some number n of quasiparticle excitations over your ground state, which are indistinguishable quasiparticles, the states of the system, for even when the positions of these quasiparticles are fixed, there's a degenerate set of states here. And when these quasiparticles are exchanged adiabatically as a function of time, for example, then the effect on these states is to act with a unitary matrix acting on these labels for the degeneracy. So this generalizes the usual Fermi or Bose statistics behavior, which would be a plus or minus sign. And this rather bizarre behavior actually occurs in some quantum Hall states for electrons, let's say. And this our favorite example of these states, probably, theoretically speaking, that is, we're pretty sure that this underlies the observed quantized Hall state at filling factor 5/2. So this this is a very interesting type of structure, especially because it involves non-local storage of information, if you like. The information about the degeneracy is non-local information. The degeneracy is usually something like a number exponential in n, at least asymptotically, and in some of our favorite examples, it's less than 2 to the n. So you see, since these are indistinguishable particles, there's no way to split this degeneracy into some finite set of states per quasiparticle, which would inevitably give you a power of some integer to the power n. If it's interesting, it's got to be a power bigger than an integer bigger than or equal to 2. So you see, it has to be something non-local and therefore subtle and therefore also robust. Okay. So in the quantum Hall states of electrons in a higher magnetic field, that's kind of some unfinished business that we still want to see. But a future direction where similar things can also be seen is in rotating cold atoms. So nowadays it's possible to cool and trap atoms in a parabolic potential. So these are neutral atoms, but when one of the things you can do with them is you can set them rotating fast, as supposed to be indicated here. As they rotate faster, centrifugal force drives them out into a pancake shape, and so you get an essentially two-dimensional system. And then this maps onto a quantum Hall type of physics, because in the rotating frame, the Coriolis force has the same form as the Lorentz force on a charged particle in a uniform magnetic field. So we actually do get into a quantum Hall situation. At low rotation rates, the ground state of this is a vortex lattice, but at high rotation rates, this is supposed to melt and form some kind of fractional quantum Hall fluids. And there's theoretical evidence that these occur in a sequence here labeled by an integer k over 2 for the filling factor, and that these states are some non-abelian states, at least the k greater than 1 cases are non-abelian states that we discussed some time ago. And the properties of these states, for those who know what this means anyway, are related to level k SU2 Chern-Simons gauge theory. And in a closely connected way, there are gapless edge excitations propagating in chirally in one direction along the edge, which are related to SU2 current algebra. So those are the interesting aspects. And in general, the cold atom business provides a new kind of tool, rather non-traditional tool, for looking at interesting many-body physics in a condensed matter system. Thanks.
Thank you, Nick. And I would like to call up Phil Anderson.
Just leave it on.
In the stand here, so.
Yeah.
Over here and over this.
This way. Yeah. I apologize for my very low tech. Transparencies. I forgot the set of transparencies that I had prepared. Probably that's all to the good. they also seem to have come off on each other. Sorry. What I wanted to talk about is to try to convince you that we are nowhere near the end of our problems, that there are problems in this field that are simple, unsolved, absolutely unsolved, and that we ought to be terribly ashamed of. And one of them is what is called the strange metal. I don't know whether you can really see through this, but what I've tried here is to draw the phase diagram, the famous conventional phase diagram of a high-TC cuprate superconductor. And it has this antiferromagnetic region over here, which, as someone said, we really understand. It has the superconducting region, which I think we, in fact, really understand. But it has two areas which are the subject of great contention and misunderstanding. And one of them is called the pseudo-gap state, which occurs for low doping above the superconducting state, and apparently for almost all dopings that ever show superconductivity. And I would say that we even have pretty good intuitions as to what that state is about. And then over here we have something called the strange metal. And the strange metal has a lot of peculiar properties, but recently perhaps the most peculiar of all was shown that the conductivity and the infrared conductivity behaves as a perfect power of the frequency. It behaves as 1 over I omega to the P. This behavior lasts from 10 degrees or 10 wave numbers up to nearly 10,000 waves, 3 decades of frequency. It is not achieved by backing out any residual conductivity or anything like that. It's really a power law, and there are many other anomalies that that accompany this strange metal. 0.7. Yeah. Oh my Lord, these really have come off on each other. But we know what the Hamiltonian is. I would argue that the Hamiltonian is the Hubbard Hamiltonian, and that it's very unlikely that there is any significant modification of that over that energy range. The question is, if we can't solve this, what good are we? It's the simplest possible many-body defined. We even have all kinds of experimental data about it, and there is no accepted, not even a remotely accepted theory of this state. I have one idea, a direction of, which is a direction to go, and it has to do with that all of the easy problems in condensed matter in these heavy, strong interacting physics are solved by a single approach, which you can call Shankar's renormalization group, or I like the name, the poor person's renormalization group. It used to be called the poor man's renormalization group, but it has become politically correct. And that involves taking the Fermi energy, I will take 15 more seconds here, taking the Fermi energy and removing states one by one, or a few by a few, and reducing, or not the Fermi energy, but the kinetic energy, reducing the kinetic energy. And as you squeeze down the kinetic energy is bigger than the parameter U, which is the interaction, and the parameter U gets smaller and smaller, and eventually everything happens when U gets small. The reason why U has to get small is that U represents the difference, the failure of Fermi liquid theory. Fermi liquid theory requires that at the Fermi liquid limiting fixed point, that there be no difference between holes and electrons. And if you think just a very little bit, the parameter U, the interaction between up and down spins, breaks that symmetry. One can say things more explicit about that symmetry, but it is the case. U is an interesting parameter because it's the only thing in condensed matter physics that's left over from quantum electrodynamics. It is there because the QED people took care of the Coulomb self-energy of the single electron. The other interesting thing about U is that it is the dirty little secret of LD, of local density theory, in that it has to be corrected for in order to get the right answers. But what happens if U is bigger than all the kinetic energies in the problem? Then there's only one thing you can do, is to go to the limit of U equals infinity, to take that limiting point. But that is necessarily a non-Fermi liquid theory because it is not whole particle symmetric. That's what happens in the quantum Hall effect. You always project in the quantum Hall effect and you use Jastrow functions which vanish when two particles come together, which have a node when two particles come together. That is what you're going to have to do in this case. You're going to have to use Jastrow functions. You can't use any form of Fermi liquid theory. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the touchdown. I remember Phil reporting at an IT conference about 10 years ago saying, the death knell to Fermi liquid theory, move beyond this. And I, as a younger and perhaps more impressionable theorist at that stage, I must admit I was a little skeptical, but I think many of us have become converts to Phil's, I think, optimism about the future of this field, actually, and about the many unsolved and interesting problems which remain.
Okay, so Steve mentioned in his talk that the theorists have shown incredible perseverance in focusing on the high TC problem for nearly a decade and a half. But really, one thing that's made it easy is the continuing emergence of new and exciting experiments with new information. And I want to survey some of the most recent experiments, a bias survey, nevertheless, surely, and speculate on how it's almost certain that new experiments will continue to emerge and really keep the field fresh. So among the many exotic many-body states we've heard about, it's pretty clear that, more precise experiments will help in resolving and deciding between competing theories. And among a wish list you might want to put up for the next 25 years would be, say, atomic resolution of magnetic fields, manipulating and measuring single electron spins, and also spectral information on various localized charge dynamics. So I'll quickly survey where we are on some of these dreams and where we can reasonably hope to go. So one certainly very important experiment has been the experiment by the group of Kirtley and Moeller, which is a mesoscopic measurement of magnetic fields. And here you see a picture of flux quanta, single flux quanta or half flux quanta, on the surface of a high temperature superconductor. And this was key in establishing the D-wave nature of the pairing. Notice the length scale here is about 10 microns, which is far from an atomic scale. So one can perhaps hope with improving technology that you could eventually increase the resolution of these flux quanta and measure magnetic fields on really almost atomic scales. And that will certainly, I think, be very helpful in resolving various competing proposals of other competing states on the surface. There is one way you can really increase the resolution of these vortices, and that's by looking not at magnetic fields, but at charges. So if you look at single electron tunneling, these are the same vortices now, but on a much finer scale of 100 angstroms, so a factor of almost 10,000 finer scale. And so here's a single vortex, and what emerged in this study by Seamus Davis's group was the appearance of some sort of atomic scale over about four-ladder spacing modulations in the local density of states. So this has certainly been one of the important experiments in the last few years, which have been with many interesting theoretical proposals in understanding what's going on right on the core of a single vortex. So perhaps in the future, in addition to just these static measurements of local charge, if you wish, we have dynamical information on how, by noise measurements, on what's actually going on in the vortices. So let me just, a 15-second commercial break. We have recently proposed an idea in thinking about these experiments where these modulations are really a signature of the quantum nature of the vortices themselves. So as the vortices are quantum mechanically moving through the sample, they acquire a phase factor from just the electrons themselves. And these modulations are a signature of these phase factors and really in some sense an interference pattern of the quantum zero-point motion of the vortices themselves. So that's an example of the kind of theory that might be tested by precision experiments of this type. Here's another material, strontium copper borate. This is an insulator, and the important excitations here sit on these red dimers, which are just dimers of copper spins, and there's a single spin sitting on each copper. At zero magnetic field, these spins just pair to form singlets with each other along the dimer. But as you apply a magnetic field, you tend to see these plateaus at rational filling fractions. And roughly, you can think of these as the spins flipping up because of the magnetic field, and the upspin bosons form some kind of complicated mod insulator, which lead to these plateaus. So here's an NMR study of this material. It's remarkable how many lines they see, and by deciphering this type of signal, they can then work out precisely the distribution of the upspin bosons with this large unit cell in this material. So this is really quite a beautiful experiment. And perhaps in the future, we'll be able to actually move these spins around and even measure some kind of spin transport property. 1 minute. Okay. For studying spin liquid states, another important tool is neutron scattering. This is a recent picture described in the latest physics today of the cuprate superconductors looking at what happens at very high energies. But you can see the resolution really leaves much to be desired. And it's clear in something like this new experiment coming online in 2 years at the spallation neutron source, we'll have much more precise information, which will help distinguish between all these interesting spin liquid states that we heard so much about. Another very exciting recent development is a way of actually detecting the chorated electrons themselves. We're not interested in all the electrons in, say, copper, just the d electrons. And there's a new method called resonant soft X-ray scattering, which by tuning the X-ray to just the separation between, say, some core level and the interesting 3D levels, you can get precise information on the electron distribution right in that level. So you notice here, if you send in the X-rays at 526 electron volts, you see nothing. And just a little bit higher, when you're resonant with the spacing, you get this beautiful information on precisely what the interesting electrons are doing in this spin ladder material. Okay, so just to conclude, I guess it's clear that there's a lot of new exciting experiments just in the last 3 years. There's immense scope for progress in this direction, and that will certainly keep us very busy for the next 25 years. Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we have to move on then. And I guess that ends this first panel in this session. And we're now going to hear from Sankar Desarma, University of Maryland, a longtime friend and visitor to the ITP and now the KITP. And things are going to be shifting a little bit more towards the mesoscopic regime.